Well, I know most of you here, but for those of you who I don't know, my name is Kaylee Davis. I'm married to Jason, and we have four beautiful children, with three girls and a boy. And Yvonne had called and asked me about speaking, and before she even got to finish her sentence, it's like, yes, yes, and then I thought, what did I just say? And she was like, I mean, if you wanted to pray about it, I was like, no, I'm going to do this. It's going to be fine. So she talked about joy in the midst of trials, and I know I'm 33, and many of you here have lived a life that is full of things that I can never understand and I've never been through, but God has given me a very interesting testimony. Robin did a wonderful job, and better than I can ever do, so it's hard to follow that. I grew up in the mountains of North Georgia in a little town called Jasper. They just got a Walmart, if that tells you how small they are. And I grew up in a Baptist church. I bent the knee at an altar when I was 12 years old, but I didn't wind up bending my life to the Lord until I was much older. But at 17, my parents always took us to Dollywood. We went all the time because it was close by. And I would sit and watch these people sing and dance, and I just thought, I really want to do that. Can I please do that? And so I had never danced a day in my life, and I went and auditioned for a dance team at school, and I got it. And so I thought, okay, maybe I can do this. So at 17, they were doing an audition in Atlanta. And I was like, Dad, can I go to that? And much to my surprise, he was like, yeah, sure. So we drove down to Atlanta, and there were like 1,200 people there. We had to sing, we had to dance and do all these things. And I made it through round one, and my dad had heard these people say they want somebody to sing Patsy Cline. So he goes and buys an album, makes me sit in the truck and listen to every Patsy Cline song on that album. And we get to round three, and they say, does anybody know any Patsy Cline? I do. So I go up there, and I start singing Walking After Midnight, and they're like, okay. And then I sing Crazy, and they're like, well, thank you. About a month later, I am in English class. My phone rings, and I'm like, hello, hello. I have never been in trouble before in my life at school. So I answered, and it was a Tennessee number, and it was Dollywood, and they offered me the job in English class. And I jump up, and I'm like, yes, I got the job. And they're like, you're going to the principal's office. You're on the phone. So I go to the principal's office, and thankfully I was dating his son at the time, so I didn't get in trouble. But he announced it over the PA, and it was a big thing, and I left 6 weeks later. I had to finish all my school early. I left 6 weeks later and moved here on a Friday. I lived in a trailer with goats in my front yard and an electric fence and no cell phone service, and my parents left on a Sunday, and I started school. I started the next day to work, and I show up, and these are not Jasper people. They are not redneck boys who take care of me and drive big trucks and are kind. They are full of hair gel, and most of them are homosexuals, and most of them are flamboyant in every way, and the ladies are full of themselves and have fake eyelashes. I've never even tried those on. I don't even know how to do that. And so I'm sitting there, and I've completely been thrown into the lion's den. I had to request a day off to graduate high school with my class. And I just had no idea what was coming. I was so naive to the entertainment world, as Robin has shared a little bit, and she can tell you it's cutthroat. And if you aren't willing to make choices to better yourself, to better someone else, then you're not going to make it, even at little Dollywood. But I befriended a guy who I thought I could trust, and for what turned into a movie night, it was supposed to be a movie night, I was still 17, and he gave me some fruit drink thing. It was like grape juice or whatever, and that night resulted in me being paralyzed on his couch while he fulfilled his lustly desires. And I was awake for the whole thing, just couldn't move. And I walked in the next morning. At the time, I had four roommates. They were all men, and they all lived upstairs, and I lived in the basement of this home. But they were all straight, and they were really nice, and they were like brothers. And it wasn't what my parents wanted, but I didn't care, and I lived there anyway. And they found out, and I thought they were going to kill the dude. But they protected me for a few months until I could just get my mind in a better place of trust. It was a really hard time, and the guy, he worked in entertainment as well, so he would always come up behind me and whisper in my ear, and he would be everywhere I was, and I didn't want him to be there. So I had moved out of that home, was living with a young lady, and I'm at Walmart. It's a good place to start my testimony. I'm at Walmart, and I look over in the aisle, and there's this beautiful human being walking toward me. He's perfectly chiseled in every way and has fiery red hair. This is Jason, if you can't tell. He has fiery red hair. And I was like, wow, okay, he's hot. But he's probably a tourist or something because we're in Pigeon Forge. So I just admired from afar and went my way. We're at the traffic light, and this big, huge truck is beside me, and the window starts going down. And I'm like, it's the chiseled guy. I'm telling my roommate, I'm like, it's him. And I'm, yes, can I help you? And I'm talking to him, and he's like, he says something to the effect of, excuse me, ma'am, you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. Would you mind to pull over? I don't know how in the world my car made it to that gas station across the street, but it did. And you would think, after all I had been through, that with the distrust of this gentleman, that I would have made a better choice. Thankfully, Jason was a good man, but I got in his truck and made his friend get in my car with my roommate. Don't do that, young ladies. If there's anybody here who's single, do not do that. He just happened to be a really nice guy. But he smelled good, he was muscly, and he was strong, and he was sweet, and he had a nice smile, and I dated him for a week, and I broke it off. I thought, there's no way. There's got to be a catch. This guy cannot be what he says he is. There's no dude that acts like this. This can't be real. So I broke it off. I began to date a Mormon. I went to church on and off. I grew up in a Baptist church, but I just, unlike Robin, I didn't really care. I just didn't. I already heard these things. I prayed my prayer. I'm good. I don't need to, I'll go to church whenever I feel like it. I'm living the life that I want to live. I am on the stage and I'm having the time of my life. This is what I've always wanted to do, and I'll go to church when I feel like it. Didn't tell my family that, but that's what I was doing. I began to date a Mormon, and I thought, I'll convert him, you know, that'll be easy. No. After we broke it off, I was in parties. I drank a lot. I partied a lot. It was just what everybody in entertainment did. And if you wanted to be in the in crowd, you went where they went. And I had no conviction. I had shoved all that down, all the teaching my grandmother had instilled in me, every book of the Bible I learned a song to that she made up, I just threw it away. And this man needed a ride one night from a bar, so I went to pick him up. And that night resulted in fighting for my life. No, I'm gonna cry. I told myself I wouldn't do that. He was just really angry, and I thought, I'll just drop him off and that'll be fine. And I went to drop him off, and he shut the door and he said, if I can't have you, nobody will. And he pulled out a knife, and I managed to make it out of that house because God. Poor ladies, we're gonna cry, it's okay. God was preserving me then. I still have a scar on two of my fingers to remind me of that. So fast forward a little bit. I'm driving down the road. I just finished sleeping dinner from some friends, and there's a big truck next to me. Who do you think that is? It's 4 years later. Jessica, his sister, for those of you who don't know that, she's in the back with a helmet on. I thought there was a bobblehead back there. I was like, what is going on in the car beside? It's what drew my attention. I was like, that's Jason. And I knew I had his number, and I was like, I don't even like this guy. Why am I? I'll call him. So I called him, and he's like, we're going to dinner. Would you want to come? And I was like, sure, I'll come with you. From the day that I got out of the car and we said hello to the day that I walked down the aisle to be his wife was 6 months. It was full of emotion and passion, and just, we were on cloud nine and the googly eyes and all those things that you have. And but from the time we said I do until the time I said I'm leaving, I don't even think we made it a full year. I didn't know what love was. I thought I was supposed to wake up. I grew up with parents who were all over each other all the time. They fought a lot, and my mom would leave when she would get angry, and she would throw things and things like that. But I just thought love was supposed to be something that you're watching. You know, you want to be all over each other and you want to do this, but no, you wake up with morning breath. And sometimes you're angry with each other, and sometimes the day doesn't go like you plan. And so I just thought, this isn't love. You know, you don't understand music. You don't get the entertainment side of me. You don't really want to be a part of this. So I'm out. I don't love you anymore. And I packed my bags. I was working at his family's theater at the time. It was called The Shindig, and I was dancing in that show and singing. And I got my job back at Dollywood, And I thought, oh, I'm free. I can be the entertainer I want to be. I could just do whatever I want to do. I started dating. Wasn't even legally divorced. I started dating. And then one day I was in a show and Jason was in the audience with flowers. And I'm like, what is going on? And he started showing up everywhere I was. He'd be at my apartment, he'd be at my car, but he'd have a Bible in his hand. And then I started to think, you're a weirdo. Like, what's happening? And he'd be like, we need to read this. We've got to read this. And I'm like, no. And he would show up at my apartment, knock on the door. I have my Bible. Do you want to read? No. And then he was like, listen, he said, my sister and her fiance at the time, Fede, she said they've offered to have us come and talk with their pastor. They have, apparently it's a coveted, you know, spot. It doesn't happen all the time. It's a Friday morning. Can you go? I was like, if it'll get you off my back and you'll see that I'm right and I can walk away from this, then I'll go. I was very headstrong. I was raised by a mother who said, you roar, you are the neck that turns the head. That's what she still thinks. And that's a whole nother story. But so I was just that person. I had been hurt too many times. I had been betrayed, and I just didn't want any part of that. So I was going to control the situation. So I drove here to Grace Community Church, walked in the door, and a tall redheaded gentleman met me, and said his name was Chris, and he was glad we were there. And he hit me with a question, what is love? And I was like, this guy's a joke. And then I couldn't answer the question. I didn't know what love was. I could not answer him for something that seemed so simple. Chris just jumped right to the heart of the problem. What do you think love is? If this is the reason you say you can walk away, what do you tell me what love is? And I couldn't answer. I was stumbling all over the place, just everywhere. And then Jason reached his hand out to hold my hand, and he poured his heart out in that meeting. And he said that he knew what love was. And I thought, okay, well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he knows something that I don't know. And so we began meeting, having Bible studies, and he was just so gracious and kind, and I just kept wanting to leave. I didn't want to. I thought, how can you go back? I've made so many mistakes, and your family will hate me, and I can't undo this. I can't. I've been dating someone else. I mean, I've been living on my own. I've hurt you too bad. How can I come back from this? And he kept telling me, God can restore this. He can. And so, I did not expect to cry this much. So one day, he had me come over to the house, and he said, he took my keys and my cell phone, because he knows I'm stubborn, and he locked them in the gun safe so I couldn't leave. And he was like, you're going to sit here, and you're going to read the Bible to me, and you're going to tell me right now. He's like, you read Ephesians, you read John, you read Romans, and you tell me what the Word says about this. And he's like, if you still want to walk away, if you don't know who this, if you don't want to accept God, if you don't want to do this, if you want to live in sin, I have every right to biblically divorce you, and I will do that. I will let you walk away. But instead, the Word just jumped out at me, and he prayed with me that day. And I accepted Christ. And I moved back in the home, and he was... I'm really sorry. I did not expect to cry like this. He was really gracious, and do we have more tissue somewhere? he stayed in the guest room. Okay, I'm sorry. He stayed in the guest room while I stayed in our room, just so I would feel comfortable. And I can still talk while I do this. He just waited for me to be ready for him to move back into our marriage bed, which I had broken. And finally one night I was like, you're coming in here, right? And he said, yeah, I'm coming. So after our marriage was restored, I thought, okay, I've been in obedience now. Our marriage is restored. Nothing can be this hard. There's no way that what we've gone through, it will ever get harder than that. And I was dead wrong. When your marriage is at stake, it is hard and it is gut-wrenching, and it drags you through the mud, and you think you can't ever come back. But when your life, the very beating of your heart flashes before your eyes, that tells you really quick where your faith is. And so we started to have babies, we lost two pregnancies and we finally had little Skylin. I got to bring her home and it was wonderful, and she was like the perfect kid. I thought, what is wrong with people? This is so easy. She sleeps all night and she eats just fine, and this is totally a piece of cake. And then we had Jessa. We had a miscarriage in between, and that was the hardest one. All miscarriages are hard, but I know there are women here who have dealt with it, and maybe you don't want to talk about it, but you should. You should find someone to talk about it. It helps. I had that baby. The heartbeat was there in the office, and then a week later we went back and it was gone. And I wanted to do it naturally, so I had that tiny little precious bundle in the bathroom and on the bathroom floor while the other child in the room was crying. And that's life. And that's what we go through. And that's okay. It's okay to talk about it. It's okay to hurt. It's okay to be ruined. And then we had little Jessa. She was born early. She had to be taken to the NICU. My sister Ansley went in for the C-section because Jason was like, I can't see all that and I can't unsee it, so I'm not going. And the nurse said, if you're going to hit the floor, Dad, you're not coming. And he's like, okay, that's fine. So my sister Ansley went in for that with me, and Jessa came out and she wasn't breathing. She wasn't crying. She wasn't doing anything. She was blue. And I thought, somebody talked to me. I had one child vaginally and I got to see the baby and it was awesome. And then I can't see anything. I don't know what's happening. And the nurse just said, it's bad. And my sister was like, okay, listen, she's blue and she's not breathing, but we're going to pray about this right now. My mom was there. She was screaming at the nursery that I had killed my child. She ran in the room to me when the nurses brought me back and got in my face and told me that I killed my daughter and that I shouldn't have been at work and that, you know, this was all my fault, and Jason had to kick her out of the hospital room. And the nurse was so sweet, and she came in and she just said, this is not your fault, Mom. This happens to babies. She's going to be fine. We've got her. So they took her on into Children's, and she was there for about a month. And we got to see the Lord work in just waiting and knowing that she was going to be okay. And she came home screaming for 9 months. She made up for lost time for sure. But when she got back home, Mama and Daddy were happy about that. And when she was 3 months old, we were pregnant again. And we had Wren. She was at 35 weeks as well, but she was fine. And she got to come home. And Jessica was in the room for that one with me. Because Dad, again, couldn't do it. And that's okay. And then Riker. I know I'm telling you all these things that might seem trivial, but you know, you think you're done, and then the wave comes again. And you think you're done, and then they just keep coming. Riker, all the pregnancies were tough. Melanie Lykos had to shoot me in the hip every Sunday to keep babies in my belly. I had to do shots in my stomach because I have a blood clotting disorder. And I'm trying to run through this because I want to get it all out. And I know we're over time. I'm sorry. Riker, I drove to UT at 1 o'clock in the morning by myself, because everybody was asleep and I didn't want to wake them up. I'm still stubborn a little bit. And I was like, it's probably nothing. Just go to bed, Jason. I'll call you and let you know. He's like, he was asleep and I just slept. And then about 6:30 or so, like, we're having a baby, but we can't give you a spinal or anything. We're going to have to knock you out and take this baby. We could paralyze you and your heart is too weak and we've got to take him now. So I was alone and I was scared and I thought, this is a boy. I prayed for a boy. Jason wanted another girl, but I just wanted a little boy. I wanted to be like Samuel's mom in scripture and just pray for that boy, and I got one. But I wasn't going to see him come into the world, and that was hard for me to accept. But Jason's grandmother lives like right beside Aldi and Walmart, and she happened to show up just as they were wheeling me back to surgery, and I got to see someone that I knew, and she kissed me on the face, and then they knocked me out. But the nurses were sweet. They took my phone in. We were not supposed to do that. And they videoed him coming out. So I got to actually see once I was coherent. And I woke up, and I remember thinking, Jason's going to miss this. He's not going to see it. I woke up to Jason dressed out to the nines, which he doesn't always do. He had a collar on and all this, and he was holding Riker just weeping. And I was like, oh, we made it. Okay. That was the beginning of the craziness, even though that all sounds crazy, I know. 2016 was a tough year. I wasn't feeling well at the beginning of that year. I'd already had several ablations. That's where they go in through your groin, or they can choose your arm or your neck or wherever. And they go up through the vein, and sometimes they use the artery, but they use a catheter, and they go up and they start to burn away things on your heart that aren't working quite right, or maybe overworking or something like that. So I already had several of those, and I have a great heart doctor at UT. If anybody needs one, shout out to Dr. Hirsch. He was like, listen, you know, let's just get a Holter monitor on you, which is where they put all the sticky pads and you have the leads, and then you wear it on your hip. Sometimes they have it around your neck, and they get to record what's going on. And I had passed out while cooking lunch for the children with nobody else home and boiling water on the stove. And I hit the floor, and I remember waking up to all these little faces looking down at me. Mommy, are you okay? Why are you on the floor? What's going on? And I was like, I don't know. I don't think I'm supposed to be down here. So I called him. He gets the monitor on me. He calls me 3 days later. He says, you need to get down here right now. A normal person would think, that's probably bad news. But I was like, it's probably just medicine or something. So I grab Riker. He's 4 months old. Take him to the heart doctor with me. And the heart doctor comes in with a stack of papers. I mean, they're huge. And he has this little tool that he measures with for each either heartbeat or maybe this syncopation in between. And he's like measuring and measuring and measuring. And he said, for 8 seconds at a time, multiple times a day, your heart on the bottom chambers are stopping. That is why you've passed out. I mean, y'all, I was driving kids to church. I was serving in the church. I was out grocery shopping with the kids. At any point in time behind the steering wheel, I could have passed out, but the Lord once again preserved our life. I mean, crazy. So he said, you're being admitted right now. And I'm holding Riker, and he's 4 months old, and I'm just, you know, I've prayed. My goal was, which is unrealistic, but by 30, which I was turning 30 that June, I wanted 4 kids, and that's what I wanted, and I got them. And I was like, Lord, you've given me everything that my heart's desired, and yet you could take it from me, because you could take me from them. And in that moment, I realized how selfish I was, that I would think I was so important that they needed me, that he was still good even if he did take me. So we got admitted upstairs, and all the ladies went crazy because there's always old people on the heart floor. And I had a little baby, and they were all coming in to look at Riker. And Nanette Doggett came and took him so he would be close to me. He was, that way I'd know he was close by, and I could get snuggles if I needed him. She could bring him to me. And the heart doctor explained what was going to happen the next morning. And I just could not sleep. I was so afraid. And I was reading through a lot of the Psalms because they helped me. You know, David, he has moments where he just feels he's rotting. His bones are just rotting. But yet he's joyful and he's worshipful. So I was reading through, and I called Jason because if any of you don't know Jason, I know he's a quiet guy, you think. But he's really funny. But he's good at just keeping me grounded and to just tell me like it is. We don't sugarcoat things in our marriage. We don't just like, oh, honey, it's okay. No, that is not okay. And we talk about it, and then it's done. And that's one thing I appreciate about him. Sorry, Steve. is that he's honest with me, and he's real with me, and he keeps me steady and true. So he just said, and he was crying too. Because, you know, I mean, we thought, what does this mean? What is this going to mean for your life later on? And he just said, you know, even if he takes you, God's still good, and we have to remember that. So we go in for surgery, and I was still pretty scared. But it didn't go as planned. I had another issue go on. Your heart has 2 nodes. Didn't know you were going to get a medical lesson today, did you? Your heart has 2 nodes. You have a sinus node and an AV node, and they conduct electricity back and forth, and that's what gives you the boom, 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 boom thing. That's how my doctor explains it anyway. And the AV node that's on the bottom was the one that was intermittent stopping. But during the surgery, my sinus node stopped. And so they had to put 2 leads. So I have 1 wire going into the top chambers and 1 going into the bottom. And so it was done, and I thought, crisis averted. Thank you, Lord. We're over this hump. We're done. This is great. This is wonderful. Recovering from a pacemaker with a 4-month-old trying to breastfeed and claw at your incision is not the best of times. But all of you ladies came along and made meals and took care of my kids. And I mean, it was amazing what the church did for us. And then I turned 30 in June. Wasn't crazy about that, but that had to happen. And then a few months later, I noticed my teeth, they were already bad, but they were starting to fall out a lot. And so the doctor had said, you have a rare disease in your mouth. On top of the fact that you've had heart problems, we have to take your teeth. And I just fell apart in the office. I just started crying. I mean, I know our ladies would talk about our hair. Okay, it's important. But it's your teeth. It's how you smile. It's how you greet people. It's how your husband has to see you every day. And I thought, I'm going to have to take my teeth out, and he's going to see me. Find a picture of somebody with no teeth smiling. That's what I look like. You can't change it. If you have no teeth, that's just what you look like. And so I have a full set of dentures. That surgery, thankfully, Miss Patty had some dental stuff done, and I was able to talk with her. Isn't it amazing? He just gives you people along the way who have done, at least gone through something that you've gone through, so you can talk with them and kind of at least feel prepared, feel not alone. And so we went through that surgery. They pulled everything out. There was, you know, obviously concerns about heart stuff during the surgery, but it all went okay. Jessica and Fede let me crash on their couch and watch Hallmark Christmas movies on Netflix while my mouth was so swollen I couldn't get my teeth out. And the kids were a little bit scared, and I remember the first day I came home, I had this huge bandage thing around with like all these ice packs in there, and Elisa, of all people, signed up for the first day. And I was like, why does the preacher's wife have to see me like this? I have no teeth. So I come home, and I'm like, maybe I'll just be so drugged, and she'll just like turn around and not look at me. No. She was like, she greeted me with a smile. She didn't even talk about the fact that I had no teeth. She didn't even care if I had no teeth. She talked about the kids and how great they've been that day, and she was glad that everything was fine. And she just shooed me off to bed, and off to bed I went. It was a hard, long recovery. It wasn't as bad as I thought in some ways, but it was hard and long, and I still have little shards of teeth that come out of my gums. I have a special pair of pliers that Jason sharpened for me so I can get those out. But, you know, the whole time God showed me in that my vanity. You know, we might think we don't care about what we look like, or we're not as pretty as that person, or we're fat, or we're this, or I get dimples when I smell French fries. I mean, you think all these things, but then God takes your teeth. And of course, since I sing a lot, I thought, what if I can't talk? What if I can't sing properly? What does this mean? And God had to bring me to a place where I was okay, that He took away everything that meant something to me. That was how my husband might look at me if he was going to be scared. And of course, I should have thought better of him. He was like, I don't care if you have teeth or no hair. I don't care. I love you for who you are. And I had to come to a place where it's okay if I can't sing. I can still sing to the Lord. I don't have to sing to the people, but I can still sing to the Lord, and that's okay. So we get through that whole year, and I think, all right, things are done. And I'm going to try to wrap this up fairly quickly if I can. My heart stuff is not over. It will never be over. I have a pacemaker. It'll have to have battery changes. I have scar tissue problems right now. I'm going to have it removed and have a new one put in. That's just whenever I feel like doing that surgery. So be praying that I can have wisdom in when that needs to come. I have been through pericarditis. They had to burn out my sinus node, which is I'm going to talk about at the very end. Jason made me erase everything I wrote. He told me just to talk to you. So I did, but he let me keep my bullet points here at the end. And he was right. He was right for me to just pour out my heart and talk to you. I also, and I'm not trying to give you anything for you to say, oh, poor, whatever, but just so you can, I know some of you do struggle with things that are everyday, that are chronic. They think I have Meniere's disease, which is an inner ear disease, and I could lose my hearing. I could lose the ability to hear my kids talk or to sing. Something I have to work through. I have factor V of Leiden. I have Ehlers-Danlos. I have PCOS. I went from being healthy to all of a sudden nothing's right. So good old Job is my pal, because I'm sure he thought, okay, Lord, don't you think that's enough? And it was just to strengthen his faith and to show the... that God is in control. So, I promise, I don't have very much to read. I'll go fast. Okay, so some of the verses that I look at to, because I thought about, okay, I've told you about all these things, and Robin's probably told you about things that maybe you've been through worse. And for that, I'm incredibly sorry. But I thought about what are some practical things that I take with me when the valley gets super deep? And I just can't see, and I know there's a mountain somewhere, and I know there's light somewhere, but what is going to be what I stand on? And one of the verses, and I is 1 Peter 4, 12 through 13, it says, "Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you." Why am I still crying? Okay. "But rejoice insofar as you share in Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when the glory is revealed." Now, I realize that this passage, it has brought me a lot of comfort because, well, I'll try to explain that in a minute. But I realize it's also about persecution for the church. I know that Nero was really mad, bad and mean, and he did a lot of bad things to people. And literally a fiery trial, they were lit on fire. So he probably meant that literal in some ways. but the principles are still the same. Don't be surprised. Because if you are signing, or if you are accepting Christ as your Savior, and you are saying that I submit to you, then you are joining your life to Christ. And if he was not spared, you're not going to be either. Coming to salvation through God's grace was a gift, and I knew that. In my immature thinking, I assumed that everything would be a walk in the park compared to what we had endured. And the trials have not lessened, and they're not over, but they are easier to handle. Jason and I have worked hard to establish our house as a wise man who built his house upon a rock. The house has stood firm, but it has felt every pelt of rain, every hailstorm, every wind and wave that has threatened to knock it down. And looking at 1 Peter 4, as I mentioned a minute ago, there's also the other familiar passage, which Ms. Robin mentioned, and that is James 1, 2 through 4, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you encounter various trials. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be complete, lacking in nothing." And I always like to go down to verse 12, because you have to go through all this stuff, but at the end, "As blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him." Okay, I got it out. I am making a mess. I am so sorry. All right, so there are a few things that, principles, like I said. So we cultivate joy. He says count it all joy. And that doesn't mean that I don't feel sorrow or fear, but that I see each trial as an opportunity to rejoice in the hope that will carry me through it. If you Google the definition of joy, it says, "A feeling of great pleasure and happiness, a thing that causes joy." The key words there that leave joy so unobtainable by the world is the words feeling and thing. To the world, joy is circumstantial, but for the believer, it is deeply rooted in the work and the person of Christ. Finding out as you're holding your four-month-old in your arms that you need a pacemaker and without it you would die is not exactly joyful news. Fear swept over me, and you'll see my constant theme, I remind myself of what I know to be true. Remind myself of what I know to be true. God is in control. This is for his glory. It could be for somebody else. What you're going through may not even be, you're going to learn from it, obviously, but it may be for your sister sitting next to you, who next year is going to endure something that you know, and she doesn't. And you can hold her hand and walk her through that. So remember that. It makes it a little easier to bear when it might not be just for you. Joy isn't just a momentary thing, but something that grows and matures as our faith is tested, and we see the faithfulness of the one who we hold to so tightly. The second point that I try to bring back is expect the trial because they refine your faith. Thomas Manton, he once said that God only has one son without sin, but none without suffering. If God did not spare his only son, what makes me think that he would spare me, a lowly sinner? Trials have revealed my weaknesses, my pride in you not wanting to see my lived-in home. That's happened often. Having you to do my laundry or care for my kids. And trials have also shown where my weaknesses are in my relationship with God. And through the trials, it has revealed his strength and his faithfulness in every situation. The Lord God knit us together. He knows everything about us, and he knows what we need to grow. He, too, causes the flames to burn away the sin that expose the areas of weakness, and it is for our good. Keeping an eternal perspective, I know we hear this quite a bit at our church, and I'm so glad we do, because it is so easy to only see the pain that you're in and the suffering that you're in for that moment. And if I'm not careful, I will only focus on what's happening rather than the purpose of the trial. 2 Corinthians 4:16-18 says, "Therefore, we do not lose heart, but though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things that are seen, for the things which are seen are temporal, but the things that are not seen are eternal. There have been daily limitations and changes that have come to my day just from having heart problems with being with kids and running up the stairs and stuff that I can't do. And he has given me such gracious kids. I mean, really, they're wonderful. But again, when it gets me down, instruct my heart on what I know to be true. You cannot falter on biblical truth. If I'm going to tell myself all day that this is woe is me, and I'm never going to make it. I have to stand on what I know is true. And Jason always tells me, for believers, it's just the worst it'll ever be for us. Remember that. It's the worst it'll ever be. So when it gets really bad, really, really bad, we just think, this is the worst it'll be for me. And that has caused us to be able to witness to so many people in hospitals. So many people in hospitals. They don't understand why I'm so calm when I go in there. And I'm like, well, it's not my first rodeo, first of all. But one time I told this guy, he said, why are you so calm? Wendy had driven me to the hospital because the thing said I had a heart attack. And I'm at Andy's office and I'm like, great. So let's go to the hospital. So I call Wendy and she drives me down there. And their EKG said I had a heart attack too, which still don't know what that happened with that. I don't know what that is. But the guy was like, why are you so calm? And I said, well, I'm a believer. He said, in like medicine? Or and I was like, oh, son, sit down. No, that's not what I'm talking about. So I was able to witness to him. What he said, it wasn't his thing, but I was glad that I even just got to mention that. So that was wonderful. And lastly, remember that we are but clay. Out of all the truths of Scripture, when it comes to having joy in the midst of trials, this one is the one that delivers that 1-2 punch for me. It gets my mind in the right place, and it quiets my soul. Romans 9:20, and this is because I am a little more stubborn, and I am a little more like, I just need the blunt truth. Like, those of you who are my friends probably know that, but really, just always tell me, just, that dress is not flattering. Don't wear that again. And I'll be like, thanks. It doesn't hurt my feelings. But Romans says, on the contrary, who are you, O man, who answers back to God? See, I need that smack to say, uh-uh. Get out of yourself and who you think you are. Who are you to answer to God? Who are you to question me? And it's, the thing molded will not say to the molder, why did you make me like this, will it? And along with that, I like to go back again to Job. I'm always humbled by his example of endurance and testing of his faith. In chapter 40, verses 1 through 4, and the Lord said to Job, shall a fault finder contend with the Almighty? He who argues with God, let him answer it. And Job said to the Lord, behold, I am of small account. What shall I answer you? And he doesn't stop there. He says, I lay my hand on my mouth. So not only does he know his place, but he puts things in practice to shut it down, to say no. I'm going to inform myself of what I know to be true. I'm going to shut my mouth and I'm going to obey. So if you're a believer here today, you have been bought with a price, given the Holy Spirit, and have every tool that you need to build your house upon the rock and on a firm foundation. Reminding yourself of the biblical truth as you walk through the valley, being a part of the local body, so that you can pour into them and they can pour into you. Learning to run the race side by side that is set before us. You have encouraged me, brought us meals, given me hugs, given me childcare, which is a big appreciation. Rides to the ER, nights spent by my bed holding my hand, lifting me up in prayer, and those things have lifted my eyes to the Savior. And might you do the same for your sister? So there's the story I'm going to close with, and if I can get through this, I'll be done. It's the scariest one that I have, and Jason said I should share this one. I had been in the ER for VTAC, which is a very deadly arrhythmia, but thankfully it's induced by my pacemaker. But we didn't know that at the time. And so they had me in this little room, and there was no cell phone service. It's like the back of the ER. There's no cell phone service, and I didn't have my phone, like, it hooks up to the wall. It wasn't there. And so I couldn't call Jason. And it was late at night. We hadn't called any church family. Nobody knew I was there. I was just in this little bitty room by myself. And the VTAC kept coming, and they'd all run in, and they'd call, get a crash cart, get a crash cart. And they'd wheel in the paddles, and I'd be like, please don't shock me. Just wait, just wait. And then my heart would calm down, and I'd be like, okay. And then it would happen again, and they'd bring in the crash cart, and they'd start screaming, and, you know, and this went on and on and on. And the lady told me, if this goes to 3 minutes, I'm going to have to shock you. Whether you're awake or not, I'm doing it, because we have to get yourself out of this rhythm. And so she left the room, and she left the door open just so that she could keep an eye on me in case I hit the floor or something, I guess. And I just was so scared, because I thought, I'm going to die in this room. I'm never going to see my kids. I'm never going to give them a goodbye hug. I'm never going to see my husband. My sisters don't know I'm here. I'm going to die in this room all by myself with nobody here, in a hospital gown of all things, and no teeth in. So, you know, it was just a bad situation. And I did the one thing that I knew I could do, and that was to sing. So, with that door wide open, you know, I was the only one in the room, but I was not alone. So I sang praises to the Lord as loud as I could. And it probably sounded terrible because I was crying and I didn't care. And nurses were stopping by and they were like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm just singing. I don't know what else to do. I'm scared. And it brought me comfort. I still have the runs of VTAC every single night. The pacemaker does it for me. It's just a gift that it gives to me. Every night when I lay down, it starts, and I have to wait for it to go. And every night it starts, I think about that night and that I could still sing in the middle of that. And so, you may feel that you're drowning or that your heart is going to break, but it won't. Just lift your voice and praise. Even yesterday, I had to go sit through depositions for, I don't know, 6 hours. Some guy suing me for being part of a four-car fender bender. And I just was just sick. And I thought, here we go again. Here's another trial. But they're not going to stop coming. You don't know what tomorrow is going to hold for you. You don't know what tomorrow will hold for your best friend or your daughter or your wife or your husband. Or you don't know what it'll hold for anyone. But you do know who holds tomorrow. And that you can rest in. So, work on cultivating joy. Because that's what's going to get you through. And I really wanted to sing with you. Just if that's okay, do you have to pray or anything after? Okay. So maybe you guys could all stand. So we've been sitting a long time. And I'm going to take this off. But this is the song that I sang that night to the Lord. And you all know it. And you don't have to look at me because I'll just pick a key and we'll go. But we're just going to sing a verse and a chorus of it. But this is what I sang to the Lord. And I hope that it brings you joy this week as you continue. But when peace like a river attendeth my way, when